So my plan was to start my talk with saying how good it feels that the cold snap is over. Because it's been really cold. And here we come to the Zen Center, and it's cold in Zen Center. How about that? So I guess there's been a little problem with the furnace, but it's running now. I think it's warming up. I think we'll get warmer by the end of the talk. So sorry it's cold. So my talk today is called The Deep Work of Acknowledging Suffering. So that's a pretty heavy topic. But I'm going to start out a little bit light, and we're going to ease into it, okay? You ready? You ready for this? So I hope your holidays were really good to the extent you celebrate the holidays. Hope you had a nice time. Kathy and I did something very different this year on Christmas Day. I did something that I have never done before on a Christmas Day. I went to church. And don't worry, I didn't convert. I'm still going to be a Zen teacher. But I did find the experience very moving. And I knew right away, right there when I was in the church, that I wanted to do a talk about this because it was so moving. And I feel like this talk just kind of wrote itself. And this talk is basically going to have two themes. One of them is what it's like to be new in a spiritual setting. And the other one, the deeper theme, is about touching human suffering. So these are two different themes, really, but I will, at the end, try to bring them together. And the latter part, the part about touching human suffering, may be a little difficult to hear, but I know that you come here to hear the truth, and I know that you come here to deal with the difficult questions. So I will proceed. So on Christmas Day, we went to the Cathedral of St. Paul for the 10 o'clock Mass. And to start off, I have to explain why this was so unusual for both of us. A little background here. Because I think for many of you, going to church or going to a synagogue or another place of worship is not unusual at all. A lot of us didn't grow up as Buddhists, and many of you, I know, attended other kinds of religious institutions before you found your way here. And many of you are probably going to other types of religious institutions now, which is great. And I think it's really common for a family to blend or follow or explore more than one religion at a time. Well, there are many paths up the mountain, so that's just fine. But basically, I wasn't raised in any religion. So at some point, when I began to explore, it was all new to me. I was kind of a blank slate. My parents were Congregationalists initially, and I can remember, I have a few memories of going to the Congregational Church in Wahpeton, North Dakota, but my parents stopped going when I was maybe 5 years old or so. I think my dad didn't really believe anymore, but I think what really pushed him over the edge was they kept asking him for money to build a new church, and he didn't really have any, so that's something for me to keep in mind in the future, I think. Don't push too hard for funds. Anyway, I started to be interested in the big questions of life and death in my teens. And I knew Christianity wasn't right for me. I did make a sincere effort to practice it, but it just didn't fit. And I was drawn to Eastern religions. And when I was about 18 or 19, I did a survey of them, and Zen Buddhism was the one that really made the most sense to me. Well, you know where that went. So I've very seldom in my life been to a church service, as opposed to something else that happens in a church, like a wedding or a funeral. I went to a Lutheran church once on Christmas Eve. I went with my mom a few times to a Quaker church. And Kathy and I went to the Basilica here in Minneapolis once. That was her church growing up. But that's about it. For Kathy, it was unusual for her to go to church because she hasn't done that in a long, long time. She grew up Catholic, and she went to church all the time as a child, along with her 11 brothers and sisters. And she went to a Catholic school, and she said that she hardly knew anyone who wasn't Catholic, which I found really surprising. But when she grew up and she left the house, she never went back to church. She didn't believe. And she also had some major issues with the church, which I think were justifiable, but that's not our topic today. When she met me, I told her about Zen, and I told her about my place in Zen and what I do and everything to try to prepare her. And the first time she saw me wearing my robes, it was really an awkward moment. She never expected to one day marry a priest of any kind. And she's not a Buddhist, but you know, we really get along in a religious sense. We both agree with the Dalai Lama, who said, "My religion is very simple. My religion is kindness." So it turns out we have the exact same beliefs. And so she surprised me when she said, "Let's go to Mass on Christmas Day. Let's go to the cathedral." And I asked her just a couple of days ago, "Why did you decide to do that?" And she said, "Because I miss my mom." Sorry. And I love my family. And I like the music. And I like the bigness of it. It captures you and it lifts you up. And she claims not to be a spiritual person. Anyway, I was excited about going. In a way, I know a lot about the Catholic Church from studying medieval art and reading James Joyce and looking at church architecture. And I love ritual. But it's all kind of a mystery to me as well. And I'm always asking Kathy questions about it because I kind of want to get inside of it. What was that really like? And I'm going to tell you what it was like for me. And, of course, I'm coming from a very naive place here because I'm seeing things for the first time that some of you have really deep in your bones. So the cathedral, in case you haven't been there, is this massive building in St. Paul, which has a dome. It's up on a hill. And so you have these two giant domes in St. Paul. You have the Capitol and you have the cathedral, and they kind of balance each other. And they're both beautiful. And the interior of the cathedral is vast. It's like some of those great churches in Europe. And we got there an hour early, and we sat in a pew, and we just kind of took it all in. And I loved looking around there. There was that beautiful dome, and there were all these stained glass windows with all of these saints. And there were a lot of sculptures around of various saints and various entities, I think. Up above, just below the dome, there were the four cardinal virtues: justice, prudence, temperance, and fortitude. Fortitude, I like that. And after a while, the service began. And it was great. There was introit, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, penitential act, Kyrie eleison, responsorial psalm, gospel acclamation. There was incense. There were special hats. The priest came in with a stick, just like we do in Zen sometimes. There was singing in Latin. And there were parts where people would join in and parts where you weren't supposed to join in. And there were these parts where you kneel, which is not so easy after a while. And I had a detailed program. And it's very detailed, but it was hard for me to follow because it was all new to me. And I didn't always know what was going on. And the unfamiliarity of this reminded me of how it must feel for people who come to Zen Center for the first time. Maybe you remember your first time here. It was good for me to think about that because I'm always thinking about how can we be more welcoming at Zen Center? What's it like when we have that initial experience here? I know it can be intimidating to come here. Sometimes people come just kind of out of curiosity, or maybe it's a school assignment or something. But oftentimes it's a lot more. It's a lot more. It's maybe a big moment in your life to come here for the first time. So many people say, I've been going by this place for years, and I've always wanted to stop in, and I finally did. Finally. Something moved them after several years. It is time to go. I'm going to do this thing. So it's more than a casual visit. It might represent the greatest hopes for their life. It was like that for me when I first showed up. It's like, okay, I'm ready now. I'm finally ready after all these years. I'm going to do this thing. So it's a big deal, but you don't know what to do, and you don't know what it's going to be like. And you're worried that you'll do it wrong, and you're going to offend someone, because they're going to have their sacred ways of doing things, and you're going to do it the wrong way. And maybe you almost don't even come because of that. And occasionally, on Saturday morning, I'll be here, and I'll greet someone, and I find out it's their first time here. And that's kind of awkward, because Saturday morning is the time when we have the most ritual. It's our most traditional service. The doshi is in robes, and the doan is using all the sacred instruments. And we do lots of chants, including the chants of the names of all of the ancestors. And we do full prostrations, and it all takes about 25 minutes. And I just love it, but I always wonder, if you're new, is it going to freak you out? And I think maybe sometimes it does. So I try to be just as friendly as I can, and I try to explain what's going on. And here I think we don't elevate forms over a welcoming attitude. And I think that's important. And we try to let people know that if they come back on a Tuesday evening or a Sunday morning, they can go to the introduction upstairs. That's going on right now. And they'll get a nice, gentle introduction, and they don't have to worry about doing anything wrong. And in fact, you really can't do anything wrong. We have these forms that we've agreed to follow because they help us to be present. But we're not offended if you're a little awkward when you first participate. It happens. We'll never judge you. I think that's one thing that people tend to be afraid of, is being judged. We don't do that here. So I was feeling that insecurity at the cathedral, and I wanted to do the things right. And so I tried to follow Kathy. So she gets to the pew, and she genuflected, and I genuflected, but I think it was really awkward. I didn't really know how to do it. And she made the sign of the cross, and I realized I've seen that done, you know, 1,000 times in movies or whatever, but I really don't know how to do it. I wanted to do it. I wanted to honor the forms of the place I was visiting. And it wasn't just that. I mean, the forms had meaning to me because they're the same. I mean, genuflecting, it's like a prostration. It's the same thing. And I know there are some differences between Catholicism and Zen. I suppose belief in God, that's kind of maybe at the top of that list. But, you know, what is belief in God? You know, what is belief in God but, you know, giving yourself up? And that's what we do. We give ourselves up. But I couldn't help but thinking, this is just like what we do. I mean, it's a little different. They sing mostly, and we chant mostly. They genuflect, we prostrate. They chant in Latin, we chant in Pali. And everything is about, we hope, honoring what is best in each other and doing good in the world. It takes you out of yourself. It takes you to God. It takes you to Big Mind. So eventually it came time for communion. And I thought, well, I really probably can't do that. I'd kind of like to do that. But would that be kind of dishonest, or would it be offensive? Do you need to commit to certain things or know certain things before you do that? I didn't know the answer to that. I think I'd be personally fine with it because I think it's kind of the same thing we do in a different way. But I wasn't sure. And then I looked on the program, and it says here Catholics who are properly disposed are invited to come forward to receive Holy Communion. Our brothers and sisters of other faiths are invited to approach with arms crossed over the chest to receive a blessing. And maybe this is a standard thing. I don't know. I've never seen it before, but I thought, wow, I'll do that. Perfect. Because I want to participate in and honor this faith, and I want to honor my family, and I want to honor God, okay? I'm open-minded. And so I went to join in line, and I asked Kathy to go in front of me because I wanted to watch her and do what she did. But then it turned out I forgot to watch her entirely because I was kind of scared. It was kind of a big moment for me. It was a really different thing to do. And so I wasn't even thinking about the fact that, wow, this is a big deal for Kathy as well. This is probably the first time she's taken communion in years, maybe decades, I don't know. So I went up there, I got in line, and I crossed my arms like this, and I stepped up, and the guy, he was a deacon, he was an African-American guy, he looked me in the eye, and I thought he looked kind of surprised. And I don't know if that's because maybe not many people do this. I did see one other person do this before I went up. Or maybe I was doing it wrong. Or maybe he wasn't really surprised at all, and I just kind of imagined it. Or maybe it's because I had this really open-hearted look on my face. And I think I did. Because a little before this, I had been very, very moved, and I had been crying. I had been sitting in the pew crying. And maybe he saw that. I don't know. But there I am. And he got this look of delight on his face. Like, I am surprised, but I am delighted that you are here. And he did something with his hand, and he said, I think, bless you, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. And I was delighted, too. And in the midst of my fear and confusion, it was a wonderful moment. And I thought there was no judgment there. There was just delight. There was just love. At least that's what I saw in this thing that took just a few seconds. But it kind of surprised me how nice it was. I think it had something to do, in my mind, with getting to the essence of what life is all about. You know, a sacred moment, a ritualistic moment, doing it for the first time. So it's one more way to do that, one more way to express the inexpressible. And it was about family, this big, huge, beautiful Catholic family that I was lucky enough to marry into, this dream of a family. So I think I was lucky to find myself in the position of a new person and to remember what it was like years ago being a new person in a Zen center and what it was like to walk in there. And on both of these occasions, I think I was able to put aside my fears and my awkwardness and just jump in. And I found myself welcome each time. But it was before that I was moved to tears. And that's the other theme, and we're going to take a bit of a turn here. So it was during the homily, which is what they call their Dharma talk. that I was most moved. I was most moved. And it wasn't even really what the priest was saying. And in fact, I wasn't really listening to him that much. I was really having my own thoughts. And I think maybe always before that, I'd been kind of distracted by looking at things, thinking about my own participation. But then during the homily, I was able to just kind of sit quietly, meditation. It was a bit of a meditative state, and things just came up. And I thought of all the beautiful sentiments in the music and in the chants and the uplifting architecture and the kindness in the voices of all the officiants, including the woman who sang so beautifully and directed everyone's participation. and it was all about kindness, and that's our religion. And it was all about family. And I was thinking about family. I also remembered with a very warm feeling that there was one other time where Kathy and I went to church that I didn't mention earlier, and that was Our Lady of Guadalupe Church in St. Paul. Our grandson, our adopted grandson, Alonzo, he got confirmed there when he was 13. And we went to that service, and there must have been 1,200 people in that church. And it wasn't a fancy church like the cathedral. It didn't have the high ceilings. The ceilings were fairly low, but it was so very beautiful. And there was a chorus of children who sang this incredibly beautiful song. And there was a homily in English and Spanish. And there were the sweetest people there, established families who've been here for decades, like Alonzo's family, some new recent immigrants, I'm sure. And it just moved my heart so much. And I just cannot convey the love and devotion that I saw in that room and how beautiful it was. And I'm thinking, this is us, you know, this is human beings at our best here. So I was remembering this, sitting in the cathedral, listening to the homily, and it was family, and it was devotion, and it's finding what's best in me, in us. And I was thinking about how today, on Christmas Day, people all over the country are doing this, millions of people in Christian churches. And maybe today, maybe on other days, there are Jews, Buddhists, Muslims, Hindus, Baha'is, every sort of religion. And it's all about kindness, and it's so beautiful. And you would think that this thought would have made me really happy. But you know what? It didn't. It didn't. And as I was thinking about this, a great sadness came over me, and that's why I was crying. Not sobbing, but, you know, tearing up, getting choked up. And I don't really know where this came from, but I was thinking, if this is true, if there are so many beautiful words and beautiful places, and so many people trying so hard to do what is kind and just care for one another, how is it that people can continue to treat other people so badly, all across the world and all across the country? There's so much greed. There is so much oppression. And I'm sorry that this talk has to take this turn, but this is what came to me when my heart was open. How is it that people can continue to treat others so badly? And how can it be that some of the worst treatment is done in the name of religion? And I'm not thinking of any particular religion. No one is exempt. Buddhists are not exempt. At the end of the year, I brought in this newspaper here. The New York Times published a section called The Year in Pictures. And here it is. And there's this picture on the front. And a few of you who are sitting really close, you can probably see what's going on here. And if you're far away, you can't. But that's okay. I'm going to describe it to you. And I'll describe it for the people who are listening online. So what we have here is some people on a raft. And there's a man here, and he's holding a thick bamboo pole. So I think he's poling the raft. And next to him is a woman with a baby, probably his wife, but I can't be sure. And the picture is shot a little bit from below, which is really nice. And the man has a look on his face, and the woman too, which just combines so many things. There is a little fear there, and I think there is a lot of bravery there, and I think there's a little resignation. It's like you kind of get the whole range of human experience when humans are under stress in this picture. And there are other people, women in the background, also riding on this raft. And if you look down at the bottom here, you'll see that the raft appears to be made out of bamboo poles, big bamboo poles tied together with ropes, but also empty water jugs, like 5-gallon water jugs. That's what it's made out of, and it looks really precarious. And you can see the guy's foot it's down in the water on top of one of these jugs. And you can see it's really wrinkled. His toes are really wrinkled, like they've been in the water for hours. So it's so precarious, and they're so resolute. And probably from my description, you cannot tell what kind of refugees these are, but there's a caption, refugees crossed the Naf River to Bangladesh on a makeshift raft to escape Myanmar's brutal treatments of its Rohingya minority. So, of course, you know who's persecuting these people in the most horrible way. It's the Buddhist majority in Myanmar. And if we were to look through the rest of this section, we would see some uplifting stuff, but also we'd see a lot more types of suffering in Iraq, in London, Charlottesville, Las Vegas. I don't need to list them all. But I think that picture really dramatizes my point, the gap between kind words and actions. How could this happen in a Buddhist country? How could all of these things keep happening in the world? And so as I sat there in the cathedral thinking about all of these things, I felt I was just profoundly aware of the suffering of the world. And I asked myself, what do I do? What do I do? And after some blankness and some not knowing and maybe some little despair, it came to me that what I need to do to begin is simply to acknowledge the truth of this suffering for a start. And suffering, the reality of suffering, is the first noble truth. And we talk about it all the time. And you would think that I would have fully acknowledged human suffering by this time, but I'm not sure I have. Or to be precise, I'm not sure I fully acknowledged my place in human suffering. By that I mean I'm not sure that I have fully acknowledged how I've benefited from being in a privileged position in a society that benefits from the suffering of others. And I knew I wanted to share this in a talk. Now, many of you do fully acknowledge the suffering of the world and your place in it, and many of you do that much more than I do. And some of you have challenged me to do it a little bit more, and for that I am grateful. I've talked quite a lot in the past year and a half about the suffering that comes from various things like sexism and racism. I think that suffering from racism is at the heart of so much of the suffering that occurs in this country today. I've talked about what I've learned, how I'm beginning to learn about this, learn about my place in the dominant system as a white, male, straight person, about how I always had wanted to think in the past, well, I'm not personally a biased person. I don't engage in biased acts myself. I work against bias, so I'm one of the good ones, and I have no part in creating this suffering. And I've talked about how I didn't face up to the fact that I benefit from bias, regardless of what my personal attitudes are. Because others are doing badly, I am doing well. I heard on the radio the other day that privilege is invisible to those who have it. And I think that's really a good line. I think you have to step outside of yourself to see privilege. And I think that's a pretty big step. But I think that's something we should know about, stepping outside of ourselves. So if I really didn't get that, if I really lived all this time not fully acknowledging these things, what else have I missed? What else? I think I have a lot to learn. I think I have a lot of work to do. And that's where this great sadness brought me. And it's to a place, I think, that goes to the very heart of Zen Buddhism. Maybe this doesn't seem like such a Buddhist talk, but it really is. Zen is about compassion, and it's about interrelatedness. It's about interconnection, interconnectedness. It's about seeing. It's about seeing clearly and not denying any part of reality and then acting in accordance with that clear seeing. It's about accepting the truth of how things are, but it's also about accepting that things can be changed. And that brings us to right action, which Zen is also about. The first step with respect to right action is seeing and accepting the truth that injustice exists, and not blinking, not shying away. Facing the truth of injustice in all of its forms, in all of its interrelatedness, including our part in it. So I know I've returned to this theme a lot. Lately, it seems like I'll begin a Dharma talk about one thing, and it just takes me to that same place. It seems like I just have to work this stuff out. And I wonder if people are going to get tired of me talking about this stuff. But I'm going to keep talking about it. I've talked about Philando Castile and about Colin Kaepernick. I talked about the Women's March. I talked about when I found out that I'm descended from slaveholders and what that meant for me. I think this stuff needs to be said, and I'm still working it out for myself. But I'm going to keep saying it. There's this quote I like, and I'll tell it and speak it and think it and breathe it. And this other quote, but I'll know my song well before I start singing. Because the suffering is real. And because the natural outcome of this practice is to be a bodhisattva. So I know I need to educate myself, and I'd like to invite you to do the same. Or perhaps I should say I'd like to challenge you a little bit to do the same. How about for a New Year's project, we make an effort to learn more? To learn more about the source of suffering based on race, class, gender, religion, sexual preference, anything that one group uses to vilify and oppress another group. How about asking, what can I learn? Where do I start? What resources are out there? How can I, if I'm a privileged person, put myself in the position of a non-privileged person and learn what that's like? And as you can see, I'm addressing privileged people here because non-privileged people know about this. So that's my challenge to you and myself. It comes out of my heart. There's no how-to in this talk. This is about resolving to do it. Doing it, well, that's the next step. And of course, many of you, maybe most of you, are doing this already. This group, I know, is very aware. But this is an inquiry we can undertake together. And maybe there will be opportunities to do this within Zen Center. We don't have the details worked out, so that's all I can say right now, but I think that would be a wonderful thing. And I have to add, as I always do when I talk about this subject, that touching human suffering, touching your own suffering or the suffering of others, is not easy. It's very hard. It is wrenching activity. And we must do it carefully. And we must do it at the proper time, because if you're suffering a great deal yourself right now, or maybe you're having a very difficult time for some reason, or maybe you're responsible for helping other people and that is all you can do, well, then maybe touching the totality of human suffering is not the thing right now, because you need to take care of yourself as well. So please be sure you take care of yourself. So now to finish, let me see if I can bring the two themes of this talk together a little bit. Let me go back to the beginning when I was talking about visiting the cathedral and feeling new and what it's like for people to come to Zen Center and feel new. And let's remember that. Let's be new again. There is something very beautiful about walking through a door that you've never entered before. It may be a door that you've been thinking about entering for a long time, You may feel some fear, but you have some strength, you have some support, and you enter. And the great things only come when you take that step. The other side of that door is unknown, but that's good news because you can't help but have beginner's mind when you walk through that door. So let's continue to do that, to have beginner's mind with all the strength, all the fortitude that we can muster. Let's remember that adventurous spirit that brought us here and the awkwardness that came with it and the welcome we found when we were here as we do this deep and difficult work of fully acknowledging human suffering. And that's what I have to say. And I wonder, does anyone have anything to add? Yes, Peter.
Well, your personal sharing is a tremendous gift.
Thank you.
I struggle with this a lot.
Yeah.
And I think I want to add, so this is an and not a but. I notice that when I get engaged in my outside, seeing all the stuff in the news or what's happening around me out here, it becomes so overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
And it also is something that can cover over an avoidance of doing my own personal insight. And what I think is important to add about your challenge to us around committing to learning more, that the less privileged have to teach the privileged, which I agree with.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's also this idea that it's not just a conceptual grasping, it's a rigorous self audit. And I think we have to also realize that the small changes we can make in ourselves are actually very big.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Peter. That was really well said. A rigorous self audit. And what you said about reaching outward and how that can be overwhelming. Yeah, well, that just reminds us of how we have to keep things in balance. This is not easy work. And part of what's hard about this work is it can be overwhelming if we're not careful. So we need to, I guess, use good sense about how far we're going when. So, thank you. Yes.
Okay. I want to bring attention to the opportunity that I also been suffering from the small and the difficult thing.
Could you speak a little louder?
So when you talk about suffering, it brought to my mind kind of the Dalai Lama's perspective on suffering as well.
Mm-hmm.
At times when you're suffering, you don't want to hear it, but the opportunity that rests within the suffering, in terms of deepening our practice eventually being able to acknowledge and handle suffering better in our lives and others. I was wondering if you could comment about that. The opportunity.
Sure. The opportunity in suffering. One thing that's always made me more able to bear my personal suffering is to think, I'm not suffering just for myself, but I'm suffering for all beings. If I'm hurting because of this particular thing, maybe a death, I know everyone has lost someone who has died. I'm suffering with and for all beings. And along with that comes, just as you said, the awareness that the suffering does create an opportunity to engage with the world in a very honest way and come to that place of doing something about it. Yeah. Thank you. Yes.
I just wanted to say, there's sort of a slogan that I heard, think big, act small, act locally. In a sense, the sort of big picture of suffering is lots of small injustices, lots of small actions. And can sort of chip away at it in your own life, family, your pure relationships, just through small acts of kindness. That's what it dominates me.
Mm-hmm. Small acts of kindness, taking care of what's in front of you. Yeah, I think that's good. I think it's also good to look for and be aware of systemic things. You know, how did this bit of injustice, is it linked to other things? You know, an awareness of both of those things at once, I think, is helpful. So that's the thinking big part, I guess. Yeah. Anyone else? Yes, Jim.
I just want to say thank you for saying what you said. And please keep on saying it. And I want to encourage those efforts.
Thank you. Anyone else? Well, thank you so much for listening. I will turn this over to Raymond, our esteemed Doan.